You should. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started this morning. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We finished up our three-week series last week about When God. Hopefully that was an encouraging series to you guys. But I was scheduled for four Sundays. So I had come across this other lesson by Andy Stanley months ago. Really a good lesson. And so I thought for our last Sunday together with me, I wanted to share that lesson with you guys. And I apologize for the picture. This looked a lot better on my screen when I built it. But the stars are out. And hopefully it's not as hard to see as we get through to some of the verses and things. It says 1 or 9 with a question mark in the middle. So not I or 9. but this morning, what I want to talk about is ingratitude. I will open up in prayer. You know, I didn't pray to start the other three either, but we can change it up this morning. Let's open with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I do thank you for this time that we have together, for opportunities to look into your word, to extract from it and pull out lessons that can be applied to our lives, for the betterment of our lives, for the lives of those who we talk to and who we are in relationships with. I just, Lord, this lesson today about ingratitude, Father, I just pray that you would use this lesson for everyone here this morning. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right. So very few things in a relationship sting like ingratitude, feeling unappreciated. And the reason that ingratitude stings is because it's the exact opposite of what we feel like we should receive, and it's the opposite of what we think that we deserve. We've all been there. You do something for someone, whether it's a big thing or a small thing. You stick your neck out for somebody. You sacrifice something on your end for their benefit. You take a chance on them. Maybe you give them things you know they don't deserve. And this can be something you do physically. This can be something you do verbally. But you know, maybe you give them a recommendation or you vouch for them. And whatever it is, it's working for this person, this other person, and propelling them in their business, in their career, in their life, whatever it is. And you kind of expect for something to come back your way. And really, you deserve something to come back from this person. And when it doesn't, it just hurts. It stings a little bit. And ingratitude can be the words that are expressed, or reversely, it can be the words that are not expressed. Ingratitude can be the actions or the behaviors that you see, or on the flip side, the actions or the behaviors that you don't see. So ingratitude can manifest itself in a couple different ways, but either way it plays out, it stings. And we've probably all been on both sides of ingratitude, because here's the thing about ingratitude: the recipient, meaning the one that is expecting some gratitude, the recipient always is aware of it, right? They always are aware that they're owed some gratitude. Whatever the relationship is, if someone is being ungrateful, you're always aware of that. And then on the flip side, the person who might owe a little bit of gratitude or owe expressing that gratitude is rarely aware. And this is kind of the mystery in relationships concerning gratitude, is that things can be going along just fine. Everybody seems to be getting along. And then out of nowhere, one person says, "Well, you know, I kind of wanted to say this to you for a little bit, but I'm feeling a little unappreciated." Has anyone ever been accused of being ungrateful? You don't actually raise your hand. Has anyone ever been 7 years old? Right? We've all been there. And I know that all of us here are good-natured. We're good-willed people. So if someone says to us, "Hey, you know, I'm not feeling appreciated," or that I'm feeling like you're ungrateful, it's probably not really the case. Because if somebody said that, you'd probably think, no, I'm absolutely grateful. I'm thankful. I have all sorts of feelings of gratitude. And it's important to have those feelings. It's the first step, but that's not the problem. The problem is we aren't expressing those feelings. And so this is the kind of disconnect between people. One is going along feeling like they're not being appreciated, and the other person is going along feeling gratitude for that person. But unless it's expressed, it's kind of like this secret gratitude. And so it's this unspoken relational disconnect. So it's very important to express our gratitude. And the reason that this is so important is because these two ideas, gratitude and ingratitude, both of these ideas drive the direction of a relationship, meaning gratitude and ingratitude determine how much of yourself that you're willing to invest into somebody, and then how much somebody else is willing to invest back into you. They are driving factors in relationships. And so because there's this disconnect and someone going along thinking everything is great when it's not, it makes this a really big deal and something important and worth addressing. So today's lesson comes from the story found in Luke chapter 17. Luke is one of the Gospels, one of four accounts where we can read the life and ministry of Jesus. And in Luke 17, we read this story where Jesus, as we get into the story, he asks a very, very specific question. And it's a question that cuts right to the heart of this disconnect and this issue of gratitude and ingratitude. So we'll make our way through this story. So Luke chapter 17, and we're going to be starting in verse 11. And I'm sure you've all read or at least heard this story. It's the story of Jesus and the 10 lepers. So starting in verse 11, get my PowerPoint up. While he was on the way to Jerusalem, and he is Jesus, while he was on the way to Jerusalem, he was passing between Samaria and Galilee. So let me give you a little bit of geographical reference. Here's a map of Israel. We have the Mediterranean Sea over here to the left. Galilee is at the very, very top of the picture. So Jesus, it says, is traveling between Galilee and Samaria. Samaria is right here in the middle. And Jesus is headed down here to Jerusalem. And so what do we know about the land of Samaria? It's where the Samaritans lived, right? Sorry, you're still looking at the map. That's bad timing. But we know that there was this conflict. There was animosity between the Jews and the Samaritans, right? The Jews looked down on the Samaritans, kind of this inferior people group that were not to be associated with. And so Jesus is right along this border of Galilee and Samaria. And then in the next couple of verses, we read that as he entered a village right there on the border of Galilee and Samaria, 10 leprous men who stood at a distance met him. Now, if you spent any amount of time reading the Gospels in Jesus' life, the Bible, sorry, you've come across this word leprosy. What do we know about leprosy?
Contagious.
It's a disease. It's contagious. What'd you say, Sandy? They could die from it. Outcasts, okay, lots of negative things. So, for fun, I looked up leprosy today. So here's some fun facts about leprosy. Maybe they're not fun. Sometimes we think about leprosy being this ancient disease, but people can still contact this disease today, and even in the United States. Okay, number two. Leprosy is totally curable. Although it's a time-consuming process, leprosy is treatable and curable. And in the last 20 years or so, 16 million people have actually been cured by it or cured from it. This was interesting. Armadillos can carry this disease. My kids just went and visited armadillos on Friday. Armadillos can carry this disease, and I thought these things were cute, but I had my suspicions about them before. But and maybe this is why leprosy is a little bit more rampant in the southern regions, is maybe because of these little guys. Next, most people are actually immune to leprosy or that disease, that strand. And this is probably why we see leprosy as a little bit more of an ancient disease, is most people are actually immune to it. And then lastly, there's actually still a leprosy colony in the U.S. today. Even as recent as the 1960s, people with leprosy would be required to go live on this peninsula of Kaluapapa on the island of Molokai. Not so bad, though. That's not so bad. People are no longer required to live there today, but back then, and this colony actually still exists there. So we know that it's not a big deal, but back here in our text, in Jesus' time, leprosy was a lot bigger of a deal. Back in this day and age, people were scared of leprosy. All those negative things you said about it, that's what they thought. They thought it was highly contagious, and even though leprosy is passed from person to person, it's actually not highly contagious, but they didn't know this back then. And so they were scared of this disease. And that anyone with it would be forced to live away from the general public. Now, I don't know if they had, you know, leper colonies like this, but these people that contracted leprosy were forced to live unto themselves. They were forced to live outside of, you know, the society and these little compounds that they would put together or whatnot. And when you think about it, with them not knowing very much about leprosy and not having a cure, and forcing these people to live outside society, this was kind of like a long-term death sentence with anybody with leprosy. They're away from society with only people that have leprosy also and no cure, and they're kind of just out there waiting to die, kind of in a prison with no bars. And I don't know how it all worked back then, but these people with leprosy were basically cut off. They couldn't go into the temple. They couldn't go into the marketplaces. Anybody who had leprosy was kind of looked down upon, like maybe God's favor wasn't on them, or this was some kind of punishment from God. And so someone with leprosy could live a long life, but every day it was a reminder that they didn't fit in, that society didn't accept them. So it was really a big deal.
And they even had to warn people who were approaching.
Yes. Yeah, like a bell or shouting out or, yep, absolutely. They were very isolated. Yeah, thank you, Jim. So these 10 men that we read about, because people with this disease would find each other and they kind of hang together, these 10 men are outside this village that Jesus is headed into, and then we read that they stood at a distance. They stood at a distance because obviously, they were required to be at a distance. And when they saw Jesus, they raised their voice saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." So they're at a distance, and they knew better than to come close to this village. And from a distance, they yell out to Jesus. They see him coming. They yell at him, "Have pity on us." Now, if you've read the Gospels, and you read the miracles of Jesus, and you read the situation like this, what is the kind of typical reaction of Jesus when he's dealing with somebody who's sick or calling out to him?
He comes to them,
right? He gets together with them. He usually goes over to the sick person, talks to them, prays for them, lays his hands on them. Typically, it's more of an intimate encounter with Jesus. But here, Jesus does something a little unusual. What's that?
Often he tells them to do something.
Yeah, often he does tell them to do something, which he does here. But he keeps his distance and he yells back at them, "Hey, yeah, it's me." And then he says, when he saw them, he said, "Go and show yourselves to the priest." Jesus is at a distance and he yells back, "Go and show yourselves to the priest." And they're like, "Did he say something about a wild beast?" And he said, "No, go show yourselves to the priest." And Jesus then, he just keeps on going right into the village. That's all the communication that we have. And if we didn't have the rest of the story, it would look kind of like Jesus was doing what everyone else would do around a leper, and that was kind of ignoring them. Fortunately, we do have the rest of the story, And that's not what is going on here at all. So there's actually a lot that's going on. A couple of cool things happening here that people living in our time might not necessarily know about it, but these guys knew about it. The first thing is this. In Bible times, back here, when someone had a disease that caused them to be an outcast or caused them to live outside the camp or live outside the city, living unto themselves, like leprosy was, if they had some sort of contagious disease, one of the things they would have to do once the disease went away or once the person got well is they would have to go to the priest and they would have to show themselves to the priest. And again, I don't know how this worked exactly, but they would have to go before the priest, show themselves. The priest would look them up and down and turn them around, say, ah, you know, whatever it is the priest does. Whatever the priest would do, he would kind of give them a, hey, you got a clean bill of health, you're good to go. So they would have to go show themselves to the priest before they entered back into any sort of society or public. That was the law. The other thing that we don't know here is where the priest was. Because if Jesus was talking about the priest in Jerusalem, if we go back to that map, you know, he's up here along this border of Galilee and Samaria. Jerusalem's way down here. So if he was talking about the priest in Jerusalem, then Jesus could be talking about like a 2.5, 3-day walk for these 10 men to go find that priest. So for all we know, Jesus could have been like, you know, start walking. So the first thing is you have to go show yourself to the priest, because that law says that once you're healed, you have to show yourself to the priest. And, you know, when you think about it, these guys are probably like looking at themselves like, why are we going to go to the priest? Like, we can see we're still sick. But then the second thing is, imagine if you're the priest and 10 people show up, not just one person or two or five. 10 people show up and at all at the same time, they say, we've been healed of leprosy. Would that make kind of a big impact? Yeah, absolutely. And especially with a disease that wasn't cured very often. And he might be thinking, you know, how in the world did this happen? And they say, well, you know, we were all standing there and we saw Jesus. We yelled at him. He yelled back. And can we get our clean bill of health, right? But then the third thing that's worth noting here, for you to start walking maybe hours if the priest is nearby or if you've got to walk this 2 or 3 day journey to Jerusalem, if you're committed to that journey, you must know something about Jesus, right? Isn't that kind of a big expression of your faith in Jesus to take on some sort of journey when you can see you're not cleansed yet? So I think that was a huge expression of their faith. And I wish we knew more about this conversation, but all we know is that they said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And Jesus yelled back, go show yourselves to the priests. But I wish we knew what this conversation that followed with these 10 men was. I could see it being, you know, somewhat hilarious, like, hey, you know, guys, do you want to go back to Jerusalem? Well, I don't know. I've not been to Jerusalem in 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. You know, we don't have anything to lose. We all have leprosy, but if they tell us no when we get there, then, you know, we're no worse off. But no telling what the conversation was. But what we do know is that these 10 men started walking. And again, we don't know if they had to walk a couple hours, multiple hours, or a day to find the priest, but they did start walking. All right, so back to our text. Luke tells us this. He says, and as they were going, they were cleansed. So once again, we don't know if this was an hour later or several hours later. This could be the next morning, and they woke up from their sleep, and they're like, would you look at that? We're cleansed. We don't know how much time went by. Maybe Jesus went into the village. He spent the night there as well because he's on his way to Jerusalem. But at some point in the story, these 10 men realize that they're either being cleansed as they go or they are cleansed. They've been healed. And here is where our story starts to intersect with the topic of ingratitude. And we're about to see that question that Jesus asked that cuts right to the heart of the issue. So verse 15 says, "Now one of them," one of the lepers, not 10, not 5, not 2, only one of them. "Now one of them, when he saw that he was healed," or when he saw that he had been healed, "turned back." Out of the 10 lepers that were going, out of the 10 lepers that were healed, one of them turns back to Jesus. Okay, so all 10 men are on their way to Jerusalem or wherever the priest is. And as they're going, they're cleansed of this leprosy, this crazy disease that everybody just really kind of avoided. And at this point, they start sprinting to find the priest, right? Because once they get to the priest, they can show themselves as cleansed. And the priest is going to give them that certificate of a clean bill of health. He's going to give them their pass. And now what can they do? They can go back to their life, right? They can go back to their families. They can go back to their worshiping together with others. Basically, they have given, or they have received their lives back. And so the faster that they can get to the priest, the faster they can get back to. So it's kind of like this very emotional, you know, experience for them. They're thinking, "I've been alienated from everybody, my family, for so many years. And now I'm seeing myself as clean. I need to show the priest. I want to get back to my family." But one of them, only one of them, turns back to find Jesus. And here's again where the time frame is kind of unknown. This one could have had to backtrack hours, days, whatever it was. But just like he was committed to going to the priest, he's now committed to going back and finding Jesus. So now one of them, when he saw that he had been healed, turned back, praising God in a loud voice. And you know, this is to be kind of expected, I think. Of course he came back praising God in a loud voice. He had just been miraculously cleansed. That's kind of what we would expect of somebody at this point. And when he finds Jesus, he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving thanks to him, and he was a Samaritan. Now remember, we kind of talked about the conflict between the Jews and the Samaritans, and excuse me, I'm very sorry. Luke is recording this account for us, and he's getting all these details because, you know, they're important. And in the midst of this conflict and animosity and everything that was going on between the Jews and the Samaritans, this guy, this Samaritan, made the trek back to praise Jesus and to give him thanks for essentially giving him his life back. And so that leads us into kind of the application part of this lesson. This guy, this Samaritan, he went back to thank the one who enabled him to move forward with his life. He got his life back, and so he went back to thank the one who enabled him to move forward with it. Now, we know this about ourselves, but every single one of us here, no matter what kind of things we've accomplished in our life, no matter how hard you've worked, no matter how talented or skilled we are, how determined and ambitious we were in life, and it takes all those things to be successful in life, but no matter how successful you are or you were, every single one of us can look in the rearview mirror of life and see people along the way that helped us get to where we currently are. Whether it was a lot of different people or just a few key people, there are people in our lives that helped facilitate our forward motion and our forward progress and ultimately our success in being who we are today. There are people that act like our very own propulsion kits, always there to push or to prod or to encourage or to assist us, to teach us or to help fund something or, you know, whatever it is. We have people behind us that help make what we're doing today even possible, right? And so this guy, this Samaritan, he went back to find that one, the one that allowed him to go forward in his life. And when he found him, he thanked him. And when we get to the, and then we get to these questions from Jesus that we've been gearing up for. This one guy finds his way back to Jesus. He falls at his feet, thanks him, and then Jesus says, "Where are the other nine?" Jesus asked, "Were there not 10 cleansed?" Now Jesus isn't wondering if it didn't work for all 10. It's not like he's asking, "Hey, I sent 10 of you to the priests, and only one got cleansed. Like, did it not work? Like, you got there, like, oh no, we didn't get it." Or he's not saying, like, wondering if he didn't have enough power, or if he didn't, you know, do the miracle right. He's asking, were there not 10 cleansed? Remember last week we noted that Jesus was always looking for teaching opportunities. He was always teaching, and he's just kind of setting up for his big question. Are you ready for the big question? You ready? No, that's not the question. I fooled you. The big question is, where are the other nine? I jumped ahead in my slides. The big question is, where are the other nine? He knows that something is wrong here. There's something wrong with the picture. There's something left incomplete. Something is still open-ended. There's something unfinished. Now I can move on to my unfinished slide. There's something unfinished. Do we know what the feeling of unfinished feels like? We do. Does everybody remember the first time that you may have experienced this tension that comes when something is done for you, but now there is something else that needs to be done? I'll give you a little life story here that maybe you can relate to. The first time that I experienced this tension, this tension of something being unfinished, was when I was a kid. And I was with my dad, and we were working in the yard around the house, and my dad was a very, very, very hands-on kind of guy. He rarely needed to call somebody to help him come fix things. He loved working with his hands. He was good at it. And we were working on something, and we needed some additional supplies for what we were working on. And so we went to the hardware store. And I loved going to the hardware store with my dad because, number one, my dad liked to spoil me a little bit more than he did the other kids. So that was good. And then secondly, because our local hardware store had these bins at the counter when you would check out. And in these bins, you could find peanuts or assorted candies. I remember Swedish fish and saltwater taffy and all these hard candies. And I learned that my dad and I, if nothing else, shared a love for sweets. And if we didn't get some sort of candy on our visit, we would grab a soda pop to drink on the way back. And it's kind of this little ritual we had. A spoiled little kid I was. You can ask my sisters. But I had somewhat gotten accustomed to this regular outing as time went on. And I think maybe my dad intentionally didn't grab everything he needed so that we could always go back. But the first time that I did this, the first time that I was with him, or I guess the first time that I recall this tension, this feeling of something left undone, I was with my dad at this hardware store, and we collected all the supplies we needed, and so our last stop was the register, and these inviting goodies, and of course my dad puts a little baggie together, and he pays the clerk behind the register, and you know, when you're buying something for your kids, like this, you're the one that's obviously paying for it, and you're giving it to them. The clerk scans it, takes your money, and then the clerk says, "Hey, do you want to hold on to this?" And they offer it to the kid, right? Well, that happens to me, and before I can even get my hand into the bag and grab my first choice of candy, you as the parent, even though you're the one paying for everything, you turn to the child and you say, "What? What do you say? What do you say?" And as a young kid, I panicked. I thought, can I get some more? You know, is that what I'm supposed to ask? Take some to my sisters. But the adult knows that there's something there unfinished, something that needs to happen. And what the adult is looking for you to say is, "Thank you. Thank you." Now, in this scenario, my daughter Dylan, she's our baby, she would panic so much that she would just give the candy back so that she didn't have to say anything to anybody that she wasn't familiar with. But as adults, we sense the tension that comes, and we are very quick to instruct our kids and our young ones on the appropriate way to finish off that loop. We know there needs to be an expression of gratitude so that there isn't anything finished. But then as adults, because this is such a big deal that our child learns to express gratitude quickly, and we might even go as far to tell our child, you know, if you don't say thanks, then you can't have it. But we know how big of a deal this is. But as adults, and we look at the relationships that we have in our lives and look at the people who we are really grateful for and how they've helped us along in some shape or form, or they've invested part of themselves in our lives and our progress, as adults, I think that for some reason it becomes something that we neglect. We're quick to tell our kids this is how it's done, but then when it comes to us, it doesn't become as important. We almost panic if our child doesn't express this gratitude, but we're a little bit slower as adults. But then Jesus finishes his question, and he says, "Was no one found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Stand up." And he said to him, "Stand up. Your faith, this is the faith that you exhibited, your trust in me, this faith that made you go walking to the priest to show yourself, even though you were still sick, your faith has made you well." Now, we've just read this story here, and what are your guys' thoughts about the other nine men?
Well, the first instruction was to go to the priest and show yourself.
And they did. And now one came back. So what do you think about those nine men that didn't come back?
Well, they didn't ever.
What do you think about them? They're ungrateful. They're unthankful, right? Can you believe that they didn't? I mean, they saw the one guy maybe peel back and thought, oh, maybe, you know, shouldn't we go with him to thank Jesus? Like, maybe you want to ask him, do you realize how big of a deal this was? Are you thankful at all? Jesus just changed up your life completely and you kind of just went on your merry way, right? That might be the attitude that we have. But I think that if we were able to track down those nine men, if we could go back and find them, I bet that they were praising God as they made their way to the priest. If we could track them down and ask them, hey, I just have one question for you. Are you thankful? What would they say? Of course we're thankful. We are absolutely thankful. We are grateful for what Jesus has done. I think that's what they would say. They would say, we can't believe it, and our hearts and our souls and our minds are filled with gratitude. But the problem is this, and again, this is where as adults we can mess this up, and where we miss it is when it comes to the other nine. They felt it, they didn't express it. The other nine felt it, but they didn't express it. The other nine were completely healed, and they were just going to move on with their lives, and is that a big deal? Jesus, I think, thought so. Jesus asked, where are the other nine? Weren't all ten healed? Jesus knew something was missing. And so this brings us to the very simple idea, and it's an idea that currently affects relationship. This isn't a future concept. This is a concept, a very simple idea that currently affects every single relationship that we have today. And it can affect it for the positive or for the negative. And the very simple idea is this. Unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. Isn't that simple? Can't see it? Oh, that's because it skipped twice. Well, oh, it's in red. I'm not supposed to be at that slide yet. There's a slide missing. Okay, the slide's supposed to say unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. And so that feeling of gratitude that you feel for someone, when something does something for you and you feel grateful, that feeling that you have, they also feel as the other person, but they feel it as ingratitude if it's not expressed. And then we can take it a little bit deeper, which is right here. And sorry that didn't show up. That says unexpressed gratitude is experienced as rejection. That's the word in red there. And you know, you guys know how this works. Ingratitude communicates the attitude of, I deserve that. I deserve that. Well, have you thanked your mom? What do you mean? She's my mom. She's supposed to do that thing. Well, have you thanked your employee? And it's like, what do you think I pay him for? He's supposed to do those things. I don't need to thank him. I pay him for that. And you can kind of see how this ingratitude projects the idea that I deserve, and it implants the seeds of rejection. Have you guys ever heard comments like that before? So what happens is, and this can happen without you even meaning to, an unexpressed gratitude begins to feel like rejection. And over time, if this continues on and on and on, the unexpressed gratitude has the same effect as rejection. And we know this about our hearts. We're all created by God. I know this about my heart, and I know it about your heart, because we're made this way. But our hearts gravitate towards acceptance. Is that true? Our hearts gravitate towards acceptance, and our hearts repel rejection. It's just the way we're all this way. We gravitate towards acceptance. And ingratitude is a very subtle form of rejection. And over time, like I said, if this continues on and on and on, you can literally ingratitude someone right out of your life. You can ingratitude a son or a daughter right out of your home. Because over time, it has the exact same effect as rejection. And this is why we have to do something about it. It's not enough to feel it. We need to express it. It's not enough to think about being grateful or tell someone else you're grateful for someone else. At some point in all the relationships in our lives, we need to be intentional and express that gratitude that we feel to the person that we are grateful for. And I get that, you know, for some people this is an easy thing to fix, and for some other people this will be a lot harder. It's true that everyone's personalities and their makeups are totally different, and some people will just really struggle with this, and not because they don't want to express that gratitude, because it's just not their personality. It's not their makeup, but at some point we're going to have to figure out how to convey what is in our hearts to the minds of the people that we're grateful for, because like I said, over time, the unexpressed gratitude has that same result, and it communicates rejection. Everybody's heart is an acceptance magnet, and everybody's heart is repelled by rejection. And then, to take it even a step further, not only can unexpressed gratitude communicate ingratitude and ultimately rejection. Oh, these really didn't turn up very well. This says unexpressed gratitude may indicate an inflated view of self. Unexpressed gratitude, it's like the gratitude is in your heart, but you can't say anything. She's supposed to do that, or he's supposed to do this. That's why I pay him. Look at what all I've done for them. They owe this to me. Unexpressed gratitude may indicate an inflated view of self. So in other words, if it is hard for you to say thank you, if it is hard for you to sit someone down and just say, hey, I truly appreciate everything that you do, then you need to ask yourself why. Because we're all smart enough to know that we didn't get to where we are today all by ourselves, based off of our own actions. We know that about ourselves. We know that there are people scattered all over our past that helped prod and encourage us along the way. So if it is just hard to say those words, to express that feeling of gratitude, then you need to ask yourself why, and maybe this is the cause. Maybe it's an inflated view of self. Because if we had found those nine guys on their way to see the priest, I'm sure they would have told us, oh, yeah, absolutely, we are grateful. But it's not enough to feel it. Gratitude, it's not enough to feel it. You've got to express it. And again, it's not like we're all going to express our gratitude in the same way, and that's okay if we don't express it the same way, right? The same way as somebody else. Some people are very creative and they're very bubbly and they're energetic, and that's how they're going to communicate their gratitude. Other people might not be so energetic and bubbly and creative in the way they do it. But the point is, we express it because gratitude and ingratitude are a couple of those driving factors in every relationship for either the positive or for the negative. And so it's super, super important that we get into the habit of expressing our gratitude. So the question is, and this was up in the very beginning, is are you going to be the one or are you going to be the nine? So a couple things by way of application today and how we can implement and apply this to our lives. And we've been talking, or as we've been talking to about this, you may have had a couple of people or names that came to your mind, and that's good. The point of this was, is to bring those people to mind that maybe you need to communicate gratitude towards. But this is how I felt going through this lesson, and I know that if I was now sitting where you guys are sitting, I'd be kind of thinking this. I'd be kind of thinking, yeah, so-and-so's here, and I am really thankful for them, and I probably haven't communicated that at all, maybe not in a while. But if I express my gratitude toward them tomorrow, they're just going to think I did it because of today, right? So I'm going to wait a couple of weeks until, okay, and it wears off, right? And if we're being honest, that's called pride right there. And I get it. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Nobody wants to be told how to live their lives. But let me tell you what will happen on the flip side, okay? So if that person is sitting here today, and you don't express your gratitude, it's going to hurt even more now. They're going to feel even more unappreciated because they know you were here and you were listening. So it is okay to say to them, you know, as we sat in Sunday school the other day, you came to my mind and I just wanted to let you know how much, okay? That is okay to go back to them and say that. They know it's not your idea. If it was your idea, you would have done it a long time ago. Thank you. Are you cutting me off? I'll wrap this up. So a couple of questions for you guys to ponder as we think about those people who need to express our gratitude to. And I'll ask these questions, then we can go. Who do you take for granted? Think about that. Who's the person that you think, you know, that's what they're supposed to do? I pay them to do that. That's the relationship. That's the arrangement we came to. That's their job. Who has helped facilitate your forward progress that you've just taken for granted? Second question is this. Who do you need to close the circle with? They've done their part, and you've never gone back, and you've never expressed the gratitude, and so that loop is still open. It's still unfinished. Who do you need to thank? And as you think about those people, I'm going to end with a challenge for you guys. And my challenge for you guys, as you think about who those people are and who you might need to, or who you might owe a debt of gratitude to, is to write three notes. Three notes. And I am talking about, I'm not talking about sending a quick text or an email, hey man, thank you so much for all you do. I'm talking about a handwritten note. I'm in real estate, and they tell us all the time how much power and effect a handwritten note is, because it communicates that not only were you thinking about the person, but you took the time to sit down and write out that handwritten note. So this week, if you're willing to accept the challenge, write out three handwritten notes. It could be more than three. Maybe you only have two people, whatever it is. But write out a handwritten note to anyone that you might think that you owe a debt of gratitude to, because we know from our story, we all feel grateful, but it's not enough to necessarily feel that grateful. We need to express it. Mr. Jim.
You know, I agree with everything you said, John. From a Christian point of view, I think looking at the other side of this, usually what we're doing is something and out of love. Mm-hmm. Our, you know, we feel that, but
No.
Did you get that?
No, and we should never do anything in expectation.
There's a balance to that as well.
Absolutely.
Us who have done something to not be feel.
Absolutely. No, our motivation should never be to have something come back to us. But let me ask you a question. If you continually put yourself out there for someone, to continually, whatever you're doing for them, helping them, prod them, and they never come back to you and say, Jim, you know, thank you. How does your heart start to feel over time if that continues to persist? Like, do you start to feel that tension, that kind of the gap widening? It's like, well, maybe I'm going to stop because maybe it's not such a big deal to them. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, our motivation should never be...
But then I might reflect that back on myself and go, hey, wait a minute.
Well, sure. Yeah. No, the point of this was not to be the person expecting something.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we need to be careful not to take that attitude
no.
of rejection. Or that
no. But we do need to be the people that express that gratitude regardless. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
To get to that point where you can just do things for people without ever expecting anything and not be hurt by it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But even Christ in that question there, he said, were there not nine of them, or were there not
ten?
He asked the question, why are only one of you expressing this?
Yep. Yep, absolutely. If you're the one that wants to hide behind a quick, hey, thank you.
No,
if that's the way you are and you're the one that wants to go to the, absolutely. No, this wasn't a, hey, it's got to be this way. It is just whatever it is that you need to do to be more in the habit to express that gratitude. Because we all have many things to be grateful for and many people to be grateful for in our lives. Absolutely. Good questions.
Just kidding.
What were you going to say, Bob?
It's not so much necessarily that the other nine didn't come back. They may have never been taught. And that's the way a lot of kids are now.
Yeah.
For sure.
They've never been led in how to treat other people.
It's very true. I tend to think that with these other nine, they should have known because they had the faith. They knew who Jesus was. They knew all about him. They shouted out to him. They went in faith, but then they just kept going with their lives. But you're right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. To that.
Yep.
Or whatever, we can think of all kinds of reasons.
Yep. Absolutely. Good questions, good thoughts. We're 5 minutes over, so we'll close in